From the West Australian, I'm Ben O'Shea, and this is The West Live.
The West Live.
The West Live.
Brought to you by the State School Teachers Union campaign to fix WA's teacher shortage.
I think it's a good rule of thumb not to criticise other people's parenting. For starters, you don't have any idea about their family situation, and there's no way your criticism will be well received if you give it. That said, I reckon you'd struggle to find anyone who hasn't had a crack at someone else's parenting skills behind that person's back. The Bible might say, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone," but folks be chucking stones left, right and centre these days when it comes to what we perceive as the bad parenting of others. And we got a great example of it today when Royal Life Saving WA came out and slammed West Aussie parents for their behaviour at public pools. Apparently, aquatic centres around the state have had to resort to putting up signs pleading with parents not to treat the pools like a babysitting service. Royal Life Saving WA says parents will walk in with the child, then wait a bit and go out and do some shopping. Or they'll drop them for a swimming lesson but won't come back until long after the lesson has ended. Now, I know I said we shouldn't criticise other people's parenting, but that is some shitty parenting right there. It's also extremely dangerous. It only takes a matter of seconds for a child to get into trouble in the water, and every year, 42 Aussie kids are hospitalised after near drownings at public pools. So if you're dumping your kids at an aquatic centre while you go and hit the shops, you're basically playing Russian roulette with your kids' safety. And all of this comes at a time when parents might be looking at their local pool as a great way to keep the kids occupied while they run some silly season errands. But it's really not okay. So just don't. Coming up on the show, Sports Minister Tony Booty takes us through the WA government's plan to steal the second test. Plus, Bitcoin has taken a dive and Perth is heating up. But first, let's see what's making news.
The West Live. Making news.
Joining me now in the studio is Sunrise correspondent Matt Tinney. G'day, mate.
G'day, mate. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you too. How was your weekend?
Had a brilliant weekend. Lots of Christmas do's and the like. How was your event? You know, everyone came out from Perth to see you in the Christmas pageant.
Yeah, you know, I've never been recognised so much in my life.
Yes.
But as the Nutcracker. So on the West Australian float, for the first time the West has ever had a float in the 50-year history of the Christmas pageant, and going down the terrace, I could hear kids, you know, sort of 20, 30 metres into the distance yelling out, "Here comes the Nutcracker. The Nutcracker's on the way." And then they're going, "Merry Christmas, Nutcracker." So it was fantastic.
It's such a great vibe, isn't it?
My cheeks were literally cramping by the end of it from smiling so much.
How was your hand from waving so
much? Actually, surprisingly sore.
Okay.
It was for like an hour just sort of waving.
More than the COVID jab?
Yeah. It definitely hurt more than that. But the sad thing was, you know, at the end of the parade, got off the float and got changed out of my Nutcracker outfit. And I was walking through the crowd, you know, still sort of waving and saying Merry Christmas to people and not getting any response
not the same
at all.
Response.
No. So for a brief moment there, I felt like a superstar.
Yeah, like royalty.
Like royalty.
Well, some parts of it, there was 30 or 40 people deep along
the
terrace.
I've never seen so many people.
Yeah.
It's so different when you're up on a float. Like the scale of it is absolutely huge. And people climbing up the sort of facades, buildings on the terrace so they can get a good look. And so many families. That was the great thing for me. And how diverse the crowd was as well. Like people from all over Perth and from every nationality were there represented, big smiles on their faces, families all together. It's such a lovely thing.
And great that it could return to the terrace.
Oh, yeah.
It has this real amazing Coming to America vibe, doesn't it, as you're going down?
Yeah. And look, I hope that I can just make this Nutcracker my own. As you know, some of the Channel 7 people...
Have you started lobbying for next year's parade?
I'm going to. Because Channel 7 people have their characters that like to do each year, like Barrett.
Barrett
is always Captain Hook. He's
Rory, always Peter Pan.
Yeah, they've got a great battle going, those two.
Yeah.
I think there's maybe a few Santa's helpers that would like to get maybe get a promotion.
They but kept getting
the Nutcracker
roped
is,
in.
The Nutcracker is mine.
Okay. There you go. Everyone else in the building, hands off
the Nutcracker. And now let's talk about this plane crash. It feels like it wasn't that long ago that there was a plane crash.
Another one down. So there've been a few over the years at Serpentine. We obviously more recently had that one where the plane went into the water. Kilda, we had City a miracle Beach, crash there. Yeah. And this is another crash miracle. So pilot John Ray and his wife, Maddie, have survived this crash. They were trapped in the wreckage, but alive. This morning, they're in Royal Perth Hospital. We're told by medical staff there that they're in a stable condition. Nobody can believe that they've been able to get out of this situation in such good shape. Yeah, the wing fell off. The propeller came off. The tail was largely intact. So now air crash investigators are obviously looking at what happened, why this ultralight crash. And, you know, there is a lot of talk that perhaps it was the pilot's experience. We're talking around 30 years experience flying that contributed to the, you know, positive
the
outcome
good result
in the sense.
That's surviving, yeah.
Exactly. If you're going to crash, you want to survive that crash. And, so good news that they're in a stable condition this morning recovering.
Yeah, it's just more evidence that you would not get me on a small plane.
Like, yeah, you said that last time, didn't you?
Yeah, it's more evidence.
Nothing's changed.
And now, this is the sort of story that I really hate to see when a young kid is attacked by dogs.
This is just awful. A 9-year-old boy has undergone surgery. He was savagely mauled by these two dogs in our southern suburbs. This happened near his home in Baldivis. Dwayne Petergrew is his name. He was just playing on Saturday afternoon and then these two dogs, mixed breed dogs, were told attacked him. He's been taken to Perth Children's Hospital. You know, severe injuries to his face, and witnesses have described the aftermath as being horrific. In terms of what happened, we're told that the owner of these dogs accidentally left the garage door open and they escaped. And the owner has been very, very remorseful, apparently, even still though the City of Rockingham is investigating. So we'll have to see what happens to those dogs. But that,
well, they've been destroyed. Those dogs have been destroyed now.
The 9-year-old boy, it's just awful.
Yeah, and it's horrible. And, like, I think, you know, the injuries are absolutely appalling. But I think when you consider the psychological impact of something like that, like, it's deeply, deeply traumatic. I remember, not to make light of it, I remember my little brother, when he was about 5 years old, was chased down the street by a chihuahua. And for years afterwards, for a decade afterwards, he was terrified by dogs. And so to actually experience such a vicious attack like that, I feel for that kid. I feel for the kid's family. It'll be interesting to see now what happens to the owner of those dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's, you know, if there's well, criminal
the
charges, then, you know,
they've taken full responsibility for it. So,
yeah, well, it's doesn't take back what happened to that poor kid. And now Terence Kelly, who is the man who's accused of kidnapping Cleo Smith, will make his first public appearance since he was taken by plane down to Casuarina Prison.
Yep, so he's facing Carnarvon Court today. It's not in person in Carnarvon. Of course, he was flown down here to Perth, so he'll be appearing via video link from Casuarina Prison. 4 weeks since we saw Cleo rescued from his home in Carnarvon. So he's going to be facing court on charges, including forcibly removing a child under the age of 16. We'll have to see what happens today in court. We know there will be reporters. Last time there were reporters around, he wasn't too happy about that. Was wondering why there was even any interest in the case whatsoever, and the magistrate at the time had to say, look, it's, you know, a case that the public has huge interest in. So hopefully we'll get more detail today when he fronts court, but this is going to be a case that's going to take some
time. It'll take a while. Yeah. And when you're appearing by video link, what do you think you get to see from prison?
I don't know whether they even have a return screen or whether they just hear audio. I've never been in Casuarina myself facing court. Interesting question, though. When you're sitting in court, though, you can obviously get the full picture because you're in court, you've got the screen up there. Often there can be communication issues. Mm. It's a bit like Zoom, really. That's how it feels.
And if my understanding is from my sources up there in Carnarvon is that it could just be a short appearance today, and that his defence might ask for an adjournment just so he can get a bit more, work on his legal defence. But we'll wait and see, I guess.
Well, you have to see from the police perspective as well. There's a lot of forensic work that had to be done. You know, there were items removed from the home. That all has to happen in Perth. The results have to come back. That has to be compiled and put through, you know, the case.
Yeah, and everybody wants to get it right. And now let's talk about this incredible video from Mindari of this boat attempting to, I guess, get up onto a boat ramp.
Yeah, well, look, we're used to seeing in Perth the old Carvey house, aren't we? But this is a bit of a different one at the Mindari boat ramp, where a boatie has accidentally gone into full throttle at the ramp. So picture this, the boat's, you know, in line, ready to come out of the water, you know. Usually, you're going at a very slow pace when this happens. You've got the rope on. Instead, accidentally gone full throttle. This boat has just gone through the air, gone over a trailer, crashed into a vehicle. Amazingly, nobody has been injured in all this. When you see the security camera pictures, you really get a sense of how fast this boat was going. You know, it felt like perhaps Daniel Ricciardo was behind the wheel.
It's crazy, right?
Yes. Like it got up. The speed was so quick in such a short space of time.
And don't you reckon to the point where very easily could have had deadly consequences?
Oh, it could have hit somebody easily.
If you'd have been under that boat when it went aground, man, it was terrifying. But it reminded me of the, like, it's actually always entertaining watching people getting their boats up onto boat ramps, because it's like, some people are very slick at how they do it, very professional. Yeah. Others maybe struggle a bit. I remember I was down south, where was I? Maybe Augusta, somewhere like that. And there were these young fellas trying to get their dinghy back up on a boat ramp. It had pulled their four-wheel drive back into the ocean a bit, and then the boat had drifted away. And then they'd made the decision that they were just not going to be able to get it up onto the ramp. And this was while there was, you know, a crowd of 20-30 people just rubbernecking, building up. And so in the end, they decided they would just walk it up onto the sand. And so one of them had to wade out to sea and bring it back in. It probably took them 45 minutes and they still hadn't landed the boat. It was very entertaining.
It's quite a skill to be able to get the boat on, especially if you've got waves coming in.
Yeah, that was the problem.
And it depends on the location. But if you've got waves coming in, throwing it around, and you've got to get it onto the exact right place on the trailer. Now, it's not helpful if you accidentally hit full throttle, it makes it much harder.
That video is insane. And now, where are we at with vax figures? Because it should be a very big week this week.
It's going to be a massive week, because we should hit the 80% mark this week. Now, of course, we've been told by Mark McGowan that we're going to get a date once that happens. He has said, though, it will come after National Cabinet on Friday. Now, whether it happens, if we hit the 80%, you know, before Friday, whether he makes that announcement on Friday, I feel like it would be a Sunday announcement. It feels like it would be a big Sunday announcement to me.
They want to get as much bang for their buck, don't
they? Well, yeah, exactly. Going into the new week, you know, all that sort of thing. That's where they're going to have the most attention. So at the moment, we have more than 1.7 million West Aussies double dosed. That's a huge number.
Yeah.
And in terms of the percentage, we're at 77%.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it's getting close.
And we always find, when we catch up on a Tuesday, tomorrow, right? We get the bump, usually like 1%, which
would be
to 78 on Tuesday, maybe 78.5 on Wednesday, 79 Thursday, 79.5 by Friday.
We might not get the 80%
until
the weekend.
We might not get it till the weekend, which would be in line with the Sunday announcement, I think.
I think you're right. Like, the thing is, they must know. They must have a date in mind. They wouldn't
All the talk is late Jan.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. It sounds better than February, but it gives us the option of getting more people vaccinated. The interesting part now, of course, is that, you know, we're now looking at 5 to 11-year-olds being vaccinated. So Atagi is looking at that after the Pfizer approval came through. They've looked at dosage. I think it's about a third of the dose. And apparently the side effects for kids are even less so than adults, because it's a lesser amount. It's just going to be, how's this going to roll out? Because it's hitting at a time when kids are on school holidays. Is it going to happen over that period and therefore they're ready when they go back into the classroom? Or is it easier? Some are saying it's easier to roll it out in schools, you know, and just go bang, 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 bang at school.
While they're at school.
It's I mean, it's more of an issue over East, where there've been outbreaks in school communities. But of course, once the borders opened here, let's say late Jan, you know, that's right on school.
And did you see the AMA on the weekend urged the government to reconsider reopening the borders until the 5 to 11 cohort had got the jab? Now, that was interesting. I don't know if it'll get a lot of support.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel as a parent in of two kids, one who's three, one who's five. So I'm going to have one who's going to be vaccinated and one who won't be vaccinated. I wouldn't be in a rush to take them to a jurisdiction where there's a lot of COVID, even though, you know, all the evidence is it's very mild for kids. Some kids have got sick, though, from
it. Yeah, that's right.
It. Yeah. So,
well, that's what the AMA was pointing out. Yeah. Now, I think it was like 25% of the new cases over on the East Coast were under 19. So it's, you know, it's definitely
it's just something
kids
to think about. I mean, the last thing I would want, go on a holiday and your kid, your three of you, let's say, are vaccinated, one's not, gets COVID, you're having to deal with COVID interstate or overseas potentially.
Yeah, definitely.
You know.
Yep, just more reason to get vaccinated. Roll up your sleeve. That's
the
answer.
More reason to wander out yonder.
Yeah, exactly. Matty, thanks for coming into the studio today. We'll have a chat to you tomorrow.
We'll do. Have a good one, mate.
Is it any wonder there's a teacher shortage in WA's public schools? When our teachers are among the lowest paid in Australia, all children deserve a quality education. Retaining and attracting the teachers our public schools need should be a priority. The state government is sitting on the biggest budget surplus in WA's history. Please give our teachers the pay rise they need to keep them teaching and to attract the best young people to become teachers. Please put our kids first. Authorised by Pat Byrne, SSTU Perth.
Over the weekend, we've seen new plans released for the iconic Indiana Tea House in Cottesloe. It's a major facelift. Joining me now is Deputy Chair of the Residents and Ratepayers Association, Greg Boland. Greg, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the program.
Oh, our pleasure. And so has your association considered the new plans yet?
We've got our next committee meeting on Thursday, so I'm sure it's going to be top of the agenda, along with a few other developments proposed for the Cottesloe Beachfront.
Yeah, right.
But I probably should say we did have an AGM a few weeks ago, and this was the main topic of general business, that we're very concerned about all the developments that are being proposed for the Cottesloe Beachfront. So we are organising a petition for an electors meeting under the Local Government Act to call upon the council to take some action.
Mm. And so what are your main concerns when you're talking about that beachfront?
They're many and varied. Like this one, totally unimpressed with what's proposed for the Indiana site. It just is totally contrary to the council planning policy of no new commercial developments west of Marine Parade. It's basically privatising the beachfront, really. The idea is that the beachfront remains public space so that many people can use it. But what you're going to have here is a private hotel plonked right on the beachfront.
Mm, so it's the hotel aspect, do you think, that is the biggest concern for the Ratepayers Association?
No, I don't think so. I think the scale of it's enormous. The bulk is huge. Seems very unsympathetic to the current structure. And there's relatively little land there to construct something so big.
Mm. It's received plenty of positive comments on social media. I guess a lot of those people probably don't live in Cottesloe. I think people want to see something done with the space. Do you accept that that is a desire of, I guess, the majority of people in Perth?
Sure. The Indiana could function quite well if it was run as it was originally designed, like with a beachfront kiosk that never seems to have run with the lessees that we've had in the last 25 years. Then there's a cafe mid-level that's just started up again. And then with a higher-end restaurant up the top, and then with a good public toilet and change facilities. So if it was run properly by the lessees, which it hasn't been for many years, and it's been just become dilapidated, and so people clearly then will say, well, that doesn't look very good, we want to change. So but that's been the strategy of developers, to have the place in
like a poor state. Leave it neglected. Yeah, right.
It's been very neglected. The businesses haven't been operating like they're supposed to have been. They've come back a little bit lately. I don't know whether that's a ploy by developers to have the site at least functioning a little bit. But there's just been these developers taking the approach of sitting on things for years and years just to see whether they can get a better outcome along the way. And they're just all jumping in now with the COVID laws, you know, the planning laws, you know, have gone out the window. So they're just seeing the opportunity to get around the local planning scheme, and they're going for it. It's happening all along.
Mm. And so over the years, there's been a bunch of different proposals for that site. I'm sure you've seen them all come and go. How many times do you think there has been a plan to renovate that site that hasn't come to fruition?
Look, I think the main one has been that Andrew Forrest has floated three designs in the last few years. I don't think any of them have garnered a great deal of support, so I think this is the latest attempt to get some support. I know there's been polling calling people in Cottesloe about the proposal for the site, so the PR machine has been working overtime to try and have manufacture an outcome.
Mm. And now under these plans, the boat storage facility underneath would be moved to a new beachfront site closer to the Cottesloe Surf Club, and there'd be new public toilets and showers and changing facilities. And we know there's been some pretty serious issues around public amenities at the beach there, but it seems to me that you look at that as something that the developers have allowed to happen to, so that the site gets so neglected that any kind of new proposal is welcomed with open arms.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the battle for a long time is that when the initial lease was struck, that the care and maintenance of the toilets was the job of the lessee of the site, the people who are running the restaurant and the cafe, and they didn't want to be running public toilets, so they got neglected. That it wasn't enough done. Eventually the council has had to come in and take that away, but that's only in relatively recent times. So this was a development from 1995, so I think from 1995 until probably say 2019, there was that problem. So that, you know, stench over the site has persisted. But that was because the lessees allowed that to happen.
Mm. And Andrew and Nicola Forrest, the lessees from Tattarang at the moment, have said that they want to maintain the existing beachfront facade. They said that their consultation with the community has shown there's a strong attachment to that. Did you welcome that aspect of the new proposal?
Oh, I agree with that. I think that building is the most photographed site in WA. You know, that's where the tourists go and take the photos. It's probably competing with the Blue Boathouse, but I think those are the two most photographed places in WA. And that's another concern I've got here, that it looks like that, you know, fairly sensitive, attractive building is just going to be totally overwhelmed by something modern and new looming over it.
Mm. The Australian Hotels Association has thrown its support behind the extension, though. They look at it as good for business and tourism. Do you agree with that?
Oh, look, they'd be pro-hotel, but Cottesloe is serviced quite well by hotels. You've got the Cottesloe Beach Hotel just across the road. You've got the OBH just up the road. You've got plenty of restaurants and cafes along there, and the Indiana side itself, restaurant and cafe. So the overall planning has been that there is, you know, sufficient or can be increased. Like, I think the Cottesloe Hotel's got the opportunity to increase its size to some extent, and they did, you know, a really good redevelopment out the back there, you know, a few years ago. I don't know whether you've been to that, but, you know, really good sensitive redevelopment, and there's plenty of scope there for people to resort to that and have drinks and food and, you know, sit on the balcony out the front and, you know, watch the sun go down. It's, you know, a lovely spot.
It's a top spot. And so the association's going to meet this week, going to consider this proposal. What do you think will come out of that meeting, and what do you think the association will do going forward?
Look, I think we're just going to add this to the list of the for the petition that we're getting together to say to the council, look, there's a real problem happening here on the Cottesloe beachfront, that all these developers are piling in to get around the local planning scheme, and that shouldn't be happening.
How do you balance, I guess, you know, fighting for locals and making sure they have their voice, and also sort of like that obligation to be part of the broader WA community, and because it's Cottesloe is a big part of that community?
Oh, sure. Look, it's very much a regional beach. You know, it's probably the top beach in Perth, so a lot of people resort to it, and that's why we'd want to keep it so that it was, you know, a publicly available space. And this, you know, proposal just goes to privatise it. I think one thing that's overlooked is that Cottesloe is quite a small area. Like, the council's only 4 square kilometres, I think 7,000 residents. So it's got a relatively small revenue and rate base to be doing large projects. So this is where there's really been the need for state and federal governments to support the projects that happen there.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens going forward and to see what the association will do. Deputy Chair of the Residents and Ratepayers Association of Cottesloe, Greg Boland, thanks for joining us on the West Live today.
Thank you.
Well, summer has well and truly arrived. If you haven't got plans for the beach in the next couple of days, you might want to rethink your schedule. Joining me now from the Bureau of Meteorology is Jessica Lingard. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning.
And so it sounds like we've got some scorchers on the way.
We do, yes. So a beautiful top of 33 today, which I think is about as hot as I like it. Tomorrow is going to be a little bit warmer, so 37 degrees on the forecast tomorrow. Beautiful sunny day. And then Wednesday, I think Wednesday is probably going to be the hottest day of the forecast. We currently have 36 degrees, but we will be bumping that up a little bit for our afternoon issue. And then temperatures will decrease as we head towards the end of the week. So 30 degrees on Thursday and 25 degrees by Friday. So I really think if you've got the opportunity and you are one of these people who enjoy sitting out in the baking hot sun, beach days are Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah, well, 36, you wouldn't want to stay out there too long or you'd get fried. Sure to slip, slop, slap. And now the heat is one thing, but are we going to have some humidity as well?
There is a chance of a thunderstorm in the afternoon, so we could see the humidity picking up a little bit, especially on Tuesday, but it doesn't look to be a too humid day, more of a dry heat, as they tell us.
Oh, yeah, well, that's Perth, isn't it? It's that dry heat. And so what is the long-range December forecast looking like?
Look, for the next 3 months, especially so over the summer period, we are looking like a high chance of exceeding our average temperatures, especially around the Perth region. So December, we are looking at it being a slightly warmer than average month, and we could see those conditions continuing through the summer period as well.
Yeah, right, because I know during the winter there was a lot of, you know, I guess it was more urban myth than anything else, people saying, oh, you know what, it means we're going to be in for a hot summer because the winter has been so terrible. But there might actually be some truth to it.
There may well be, yeah. And looking at the minimum temperatures as well, we're looking at really hot nights across most of the country. There is actually only a very small patch of the country that's looking like not exceeding their minimum overnight temperatures. So, yeah, it could be really, really warm for the summer, but time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah, when I hear that, Jessica, when I think it's going to be hot summer nights, I think beer gardens.
Hey, yeah. Now you're talking my language.
So there we go. All right, from the Bureau of Meteorology, Jessica Lingard, thanks for your time this morning.
No worries.
You're listening to The West Live.
Perth is expected to lose the fifth Ashes test this week, but the WA government has a bold plan to snatch the second test off coronavirus-hit Adelaide. Joining me now to give us an update on the plan is WA Sport and Recreation Minister Tony Booty. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Now, I was very excited to read about this in the paper. It hadn't been looking great for the fifth Ashes test to come over to Optus Stadium because teams would have to quarantine, the broadcast crew would have to quarantine coming from Victoria. It was not going to be ideal, but there's a chance we could get the second test. Is that correct?
Well, look, we haven't given up complete hope on the fifth test that we are awaiting a decision from Cricket Australia. But just let's say that we don't get it. So we have put a proposal to Cricket Australia. Why not move the second test to Perth rather than have it in Adelaide, which as we know, Adelaide at the moment is going through some COVID issues. Let them sort out their COVID issues and then they can have the fifth test. It's a win-win situation, and we are ready and willing to hold the second test here in Perth.
Yeah, right. So you're confirming that you have actually, the WA government has actually put a proposal to Cricket Australia to have the second test here in Perth.
Yeah, discussions were had yesterday with Cricket Australia from the WA government, and there'll be a follow-up today in respect to that. So discussions have already been had, and there'll be more today. And it's really not a difficult proposition. All that has to happen, the players, broadcasting, staff, et cetera, fly from Brisbane to Perth rather than flying from Brisbane to Adelaide. We have shown that we can put on outstanding sporting events in a very short period of notice, as we did with the Dreamtime game between Richmond and Essendon early in the year, where we had 4 days' notice, and we also had a fantastic AFL grand final with 21 days' preparation.
Mm. And can you give us an idea of what the conversations have been like with Cricket Australia over the course of trying to organise a test here in Perth? Because it's kind of gone through some ups and downs and I guess a lot of permutations as this sort of fluid pandemic situation unfolds.
Yeah, look, there's been more cricket diplomacy and negotiations over the fifth test in Perth than Scott Morrison engaged on in regards to the submarine contract with France. So there's been a lot of work, and there was a lot of progress made. There's been a lot of progress made, but obviously we're not, the D-Day's arriving, and if it doesn't go our way, we want to, of course, have a test here in Perth, and we believe this proposition is the best way forward, and everyone can be a winner.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that, because we didn't get a test last summer, and to have two summers without a major test in Perth would be such a shame. What do you think it would be to WA in terms of a loss to the state?
Yeah. Look, obviously, not having international cricket, especially an Ashes game being played in Perth, is a blow for the sports-loving public of Western Australia. But then, looking on the flip side of that, Ben, we had the AFL Grand Final here throughout all winter and summer. People have been able to go out and play sport on the weekend, where if you're living in Victoria and at certain times in New South Wales, you weren't able to do that. So we've got to put it into perspective. Yes, it'd be a loss. We are trying to ensure that we can have a game here by putting a very practical and reasonable proposal to Cricket Australia to move the second test to Perth. But obviously, in the end, Cricket Australia will make their decision, but we believe that we have a good case, and we are ready and willing to hold that second test here in Perth.
Well, that Adelaide test was going to be a day-night test. If it comes to Optus, would we see it as a day-night test as well?
That's a good point, Ben. I don't know if we've got down to that depth of negotiation at the moment. I can't see why it couldn't happen, but I'm not sure about the permutations of that one.
Yeah, get it first. I think that's the most important thing.
Right.
And what would be the economic benefits if we did get the test here in Perth, or even whether it was the second one or the fifth one?
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's a great economic boost, because we understand there'll be restrictions on travel from certain states into Western Australia, but there's obviously just an economic benefit from the domestic spending that occurs during a major sporting event, the AFL Grand Final, which had very few interstate travellers, was a major economic boost for local business operators in Perth. So obviously, there'll be a catalyst economic benefit by having the Ashes here, and it'd be a great fillip for the WACO, who, I must say, the WACO have been superb throughout this period of time in seeking to find a resolution and working closely with the government and Cricket Australia.
And going forward, we're at the point now where we're going to be talking about reopening the borders and what the rest of the year might look like. We know there's a plan from the state government to increase visitation, whether it's tourism, international students, or whoever it might be, to come to WA. How important are big marquee sporting events to that? And are there any events on the horizon that you kind of would draw a circle around in the calendar and think, you know what, we could go for something like that?
Yeah, look, as you know, the Premier did announce a reconnect package once the borders do open up. So obviously, it's important for us to get international students and international tourists coming to Western Australia, and sporting events are a very important draw card. We have in the State of Origin second game. I think it is out of the three game series. The second test will be, or the second game will be played here, and obviously, we are looking at other major events at the this stage, I'm not really in a position to actually disclose what events are being negotiated, but Perth and Tourism West Australia is always on the lookout for marquee sporting events to be held in Perth or in some part of West Australia.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there'll be some rippers up your sleeve. And based on what we've seen this year with the AFL Grand Final and the Dreamtime game, the sky's the limits for WA, I reckon. WA Sport and Recreation Minister Tony Booty, thanks for your time. And fingers crossed, Optus will be the site for either one of these Ashes Test matches this summer.
Yeah, good on you. Thanks, Ben.
Now, the game Cricket Tipping is here. It's the free cricket tipping competition that's easy to play. Just sign up now for your chance to win 15 grand for being the season's top tipper. Plus, there's weekly cash prizes of $1,000. The cricket season starts this Sunday, so don't miss out. Sign up now for free at thegame.com.au. Bitcoin prices have suffered some intense volatility lately, falling to their lowest price since September. One Bitcoin was worth more than 91 grand this time last month. Today, it's trading for just $69,000. To help us understand what's going on is CEO of Finance Australia, Lee Travers. Good morning, Lee.
Morning, Ben. Thanks to be on the show.
Great to have you back, mate. So what's up with Bitcoin?
Well, it's certainly been a volatile weekend. And has pulled back from those highs around $90,000 or almost $100,000 Australian that we reached only a month or so ago. But certainly the trend over the last year has been very positive, notwithstanding this extreme volatility we've had in the last sort of 48 hours.
And so when you're thinking about what might be causing this volatility, is there anything, I guess, that investors need to be aware of?
Well, I think the first thing to note is crypto markets are not immune from what's happening with stock markets globally. And we've seen a sell-off on the back of Omicron, what's happening out there with the virus. And when investors are fearful and they want to take away some risk off, they can't instantly sell their house. But they can sell stocks and they can definitely sell crypto, even on a weekend. And that's why it's often so volatile on weekends. So we had a big sell-off around to 42,000 US as a low, which is also a big support level and pleasing to see it's up over 10% since then.
Yeah, I love the idea of that. Now, so let me just get my head around this. So with regular stocks, I guess you trade them like when the markets are open. Bitcoin you can trade anytime, and so you might have the home investors, the retail investors who are working 9 to 5 during the week. On the weekend is when they're really thinking about their Bitcoin, and that might be when they're making their trades.
That's often the case.
Wow.
You know, 9 to 5 working, trading crypto on the weekends and trading it after work. Certainly that's what happens, and I've seen periods around Christmas time where trading really picks up. There's more time on your hands.
Yeah, wow. And so this sort of a drop, though, from nearly $100,000 down to $70,000. So, you know, 30 grand off a Bitcoin in the space of a couple of days. Is that a sort of an extreme level of volatility compared to what you'd see in the, you know, sort of the traditional share market?
Yeah, it's around about 6 times more volatile than what traditional stock markets are. So, yeah, certainly something to watch out for. I think 2 to 3% daily volatility is an average for Bitcoin, but that's certainly why that we look at the sector as saying it's something worthwhile considering for your investment portfolio, but only have a small portion of your portfolio in Bitcoin and crypto. Mm. And at the moment, it's around 2.5% of sort of global investable value is in the crypto market, so 2.5 trillion, 2.5%. So that might be a guide for some. If you don't have any, it might be worthwhile, if it's appropriate for you, to consider that sort of amount, which is effectively benchmark.
Yeah, right. Well, the amazing thing about it is, so we're here talking about this big decline that Bitcoin's had over the last couple of days, where it's wiped $30,000 off the price of a Bitcoin in a couple of days. But I go back to when we first spoke to you on the show in February of this year, and Bitcoin is still worth more now than it was then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still trending up. I think average compound growth rate each year is over 100% per year. So certainly dips, I think, are worth buying. I think this current sell-off in markets is really around just the new variant of the virus. And just that history of these pandemics has shown that yes, these viruses mutate. They get more contagious, but most of the time they're less deadly. So I think this too shall pass, and it's worthwhile having a look at these sort of dips rather than buying the tops.
Yeah, right.
Either to dollar cost average in or buy when there's a bit of fear on the streets.
Yeah, yes.
I can touch on a couple of elements that are in the market that really give me some more confidence too if there's time.
Yeah, go for it.
So we actually had a record amount of fundraising for crypto funds over the last quarter, so the third quarter of this year. So that's saying that there's new investor capital about to be deployed, and this is from traditional funds. So they're waiting for, you know, US Monday to start deploying that capital. They're not able to effectively buy in over the weekend, and around 5% of all VC funding in the third quarter was going into crypto funds. So there's more and more investors that are coming in to buy this market. And then just from a talent perspective, there's a lot of really smart people that are moving their money and moving their careers towards the crypto industry. So the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, he's moving full-time into crypto. He stepped off Twitter. The founder of Reddit is putting over $100 million into blockchain and crypto-based businesses. And then the man that was leading Facebook's digital money initiatives, he's just resigned, and rumours are that he's also coming into this sector too. So, yeah, a lot of the world's sort of top talent from a people perspective are coming in, and then from a dollars perspective too, yeah, record fundraising, and looking forward to that coming into the market too.
Yeah, wow. And I guess the fear for some people who don't know much about the crypto markets is the segmentation of all of the different types of currencies, and the fear that, you know, Bitcoin might just drop off the face of the earth one day and one of these other forms of cryptocurrency might take over. Is that realistic, or is there room for all of these to coexist?
Well, I think the different cryptos have different value attributes. So they're not all trying to be money. Bitcoin's really that perspective. It's a global asset now. It's not disappearing. It's not going away. It's here to stay. So I think it's worthwhile having a portion of your crypto investments in Bitcoin. But there's also some pretty exciting other investments like Ethereum, which is building an app store for the global internet. Things like taking over the Apple Store or the Google Play Store. This is where Ethereum's sort of focused, rather than trying to replace Bitcoin. They're very different. So I'd certainly say do your research before you invest into the market, and only use a small percentage of your overall investment portfolio as well.
Yeah, and then just strap yourself in for a pretty wild ride. Lots of ups and downs on the crypto roller coaster. Lee Travers, CEO of Finance Australia, always a pleasure to talk to you, mate. Thanks for joining us on The West Live.
Thank you so much. It was great to speak to you.
Wild West.
Joining me now in the studio is The West Online's Kate Phillips. G'day, Kate. How are you?
Good morning. Good. Good for a Monday.
Yeah, well, yeah. The last time I saw you, I think, was Saturday night on the dance floor at the Hippie Club.
Sunday morning, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it was into the hours for the journalist Christmas party.
And I felt really good yesterday.
Did you? Yeah, no. Me too. No, yeah. No. Same. What did you have as your, sort of recovery breakfast?
Sorry, this is disgusting. I made myself, you know, Bubble and Squeak? I know,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
super old school. It's all we had left in the freezer. So, like, I cooked that and I put it in a roll and I made an egg and some bacon and I had that. So, Bubble and Squeak, egg and bacon roll.
That sounds delicious.
It was amazing. And then I had a sleep.
Yeah, that sounds good. I had a Macca's, a breakfast of champions.
Nice.
I don't know if you can still call it breakfast if it's after midday, but...
Absolutely. It depends what time you wake up. It's, yeah, you know, we don't stick to a schedule. Yeah.
Exactly. And you know what? The highlight of the night, just to share with the listeners out there, I reckon, I don't know if you'll agree with this, but don't you think it was when the DJ at the Hippie Club played You're the Voice by John Farnham?
Yes.
Don't you reckon? That was
absolutely
the absolute pinnacle of the night. It was all downhill from there.
I don't think I've ever seen so many people in this newsroom come together ever.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Impressive. Yeah.
So now what is not amazing is what we're seeing in Indonesia at the moment, which is, you know, a sort of a volcanic area, lots of tectonic activity, and now we've seen another eruption.
Yeah, that's right. And this one, it's a very big one, and unfortunately 14 15 people have been killed. So I think more than 50 people have been injured as well. So it was the Semeru volcano on Java Island. And yeah, if you see some of the pictures, the plumes of ash and that sort of thing are just super scary. And I think that's what sent people into a panic, running in all directions. And yeah, a lot of people injured are purely from burns. So they're still doing the recovery mission at the moment, or searching for survivors. But yeah, at this stage, 14 people killed. It's truly awful.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. And Indonesia is one of those places, like, you know, Japan, Indonesia, maybe New Zealand as well, where there's always, and Hawaii, always the threat of a volcano. You kind of live in denial that, that it's not going to happen, but that it's inevitable. There's every now and then there's a big one.
Yeah, there is. And I, you know, I remember when I was in Bali, and yeah, you, like you said, you don't really think about it, but there was a very small one, and it just, it's such a bizarre feeling. Have you experienced?
No, I don't think I've ever seen
Everything's moving without moving. Yeah,
wow,
it's
I've been
truly
a, yeah, weird. And now Hugh Jackman, the former Wolverine, is has given us some COVID vaccine news.
Yeah, so look, he is, you know, he's getting out there and he's promoting booster shots by getting one himself into his very incredibly muscly arm. So you'll have to see it. It's on Twitter. It's pretty spectacular.
I heard the needle was made of adamantium, the same thing as the Wolverine's claws.
It would have to be.
To get through the bicep muscle.
Yeah, and, you know, apparently, you know, maybe flexing makes it go around the body quicker, who knows? And, you know, I don't think he was intending to do it, but it's really very impressive.
How old? He must be in his late 50s.
Yeah, yeah. And he's looking pretty. I don't know. Have you seen it? He's looking pretty.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's very fit. He's a very fit dude. Lovely guy.
Caused a bit of a stir on online, as you would imagine.
You can see he's tensing. He's tensing as hard as he can
is,
possibly
isn't he?
Tense.
Yeah, all those veins popping up there. At least he had a lot to work with, right?
Nothing compared to Chris. It's like it's impressive bicep. Nothing compared to Chris Hemsworth, though. Like, he's actually got freaky arms.
Insane.
Like, they're, like, bigger than my thighs. I don't even know how it's possible. I don't know how it's possible for a human to have arms that big.
No, like, me either. And how long does it take to get to that? I don't know.
And he'd also have to eventually go back to a normal, looking like a normal person.
Yeah. What does happen? Does it convert to... I've never really found out.
Yes. See, I'm just looking at a picture now. My producer, Kate, has just had it as her screensaver on her computer.
Wow.
So just kind of and now, so good on you, Hugh, getting the booster shot. When are you due to get yours?
So I'm probably a couple of months away still, because it's 6 months, isn't it? So yeah, but not too far away,
August,
actually.
September, October, November.
I'm pretty keen to get January. It.
So I'm probably due, like, just when the borders are about to reopen. So I'm going to get one before that happens.
Well timed,
I reckon.
And now I've got to think about, you know, kids, because, you know, obviously with the 5 to 11s being approved. So
yeah, so how many of your kids are scraping to that?
Both, yeah, 8 and 11. So, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good.
Just got to convince them now.
Yeah, well, just show them that picture of Hugh Jackman and say,
exactly.
I'm going to send this guy after you.
Yeah.
And now, I feel bad for our colleague who was at the Christmas party at the Hippie Club and then had to go and report on the Optus Stadium zip line yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Did she go on it?
Yeah, she did. I believe she did. And also a Channel 7 reporter as well, Rory, who was there, also went on the zip line. He was loving it, though.
It looks
like
pretty
amazing. He was giving it the fist pumps in the air as he was going down. It looked like the time of his life.
And I think it could go either way, you know, after a big night out. It could either revitalise you, kind of like a swim, or it could just ruin you for the rest of the day. So, yeah, I'm impressed. But yes, open.
And what did you make of it?
I think it's a really cool thing. I think it looks pretty incredible. I would be very scared to do it. I'm not very good at this sort of stuff. I think 75, you know, k's an hour above, you know, above water would really scare me. But yeah, no, it looks pretty amazing.
Do you know how fast it goes?
It's 75. Is it 75?
Is that how fast it goes?
I'm pretty 75 sure it
kilometers.
Is.
That's fast.
Unless that's, you know.
And I saw the end. Rory from Channel 7 at the end, like, it's really kind of comes to quite an abrupt halt.
Yeah,
it looked like he got a bit of a fright.
K's.
He got a bit of a fright.
Did he?
And it doesn't. How long does the ride last?
Oh, it's not long.
It's not long,
like,
right?
Yeah, minutes, if that. And
what do you think about the price?
Well, this is the thing. That's the only other thing. So I think it was when they first launched it, they said it'd be about $59.
Great, that's a great price. Great
deal. Turns out it's $99. Yeah. So I think you'd pay it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you pay an extortionate amount to jump out of a plane. So why wouldn't you pay $100?
The problem is, you'd pay to do it once.
Yeah.
That's a one-time only price.
Yeah.
Whereas at 59, you maybe do it a few times
at 59.
You
come back. Yeah. And I think they're doing a combo, like, you can climb the bridge as well.
Yeah,
it's like 129. So,
yeah.
So maybe
149,
that's the way to go.
149, you can do the bridge climb and otherwise you have to climb down. So you might as well get the zip line down.
Yeah.
Right?
No thanks.
So yeah, and I think kids are 79, something like that.
Yeah, it's a bit cheaper. Would you do it?
Oh, Yeah, like the price doesn't worry me that much. Like, I think as a one-time thing, like, I think it looks like a pretty cool thing to do. Yeah. But it's probably the sort of thing you do, you know, when you have, like, family or friends visiting from interstate. You're like, come on, let's go and do the sights.
King's Park and then
And just hope they don't go to Sydney if they're coming from overseas and they can do the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Which is, well, that's about $300, $400.
Yeah, it's expensive.
So that is quite expensive.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, a bit more impressive.
It is. And, you know, it's Sydney, you know, top attraction. Oh, no, nothing wrong with Perth. Come to Perth. Perth's amazing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I think they should do more zip lines. Like, why not do a zip line down from Kings Park?
Yes.
You don't need a cable car. Just do a zip line. Although, if you get to 75 k's an hour on Matagarrup, can you imagine from Kings Park?
It would be so fast. It would scare me. I think it would fix our congestion problems as well. You know, if we just start, you know, start up some zip lining, zip line to work, wherever you can. Yeah.
I love it. And and talking about daredevil behaviour, here's one who's jumped off a building.
Honestly, like, yeah, so there's this shocking footage. Well, it's shocking if you have a quick look at it. This guy in the Gold Coast is seen, like, limbering up and, you know, getting all ready to looks like go for a run. But instead, he goes for a run and then jumps from one building to another. And I think it's a 12-story fall. And we're looking at about, is it about 5 metres, I think? And this guy, and he makes it just. There's a bit of commentary. The people are watching him, filming him, are like, oh, my God. And, yeah, and then he makes it and then goes back into his flat.
And so whereabouts was it?
This is in the Gold Coast.
Oh, at the Goldie.
Yeah, yeah. Chevron Mantra.
Yeah, wow. Yep. But it's pretty crazy. And what happened to the dude?
Well,
surely been arrested.
Well, so police are investigating. Yeah, so they're trying to find him. And the footage shows him doing that and then just, heading back down, you know?
Like,
a casual Sunday or whatever day he did it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's all well and good when it all comes off perfectly and you get your little content for your TikTok video. But if it goes badly.
Yeah, honestly. And he did. He just sort of clipped the edge as well. So, yeah, it makes for some pretty harrowing viewing, I think. Mm. And
like that video of the boat ramp. Oh, my gosh, that was harrowing.
That was absolutely nuts.
And so let's talk Formula One. I used to follow it so closely, but I don't really anymore. What's the latest?
So the latest is it's in Saudi Arabia, and it was just a really full on sort of race. So it's between Hamilton and it's Verstappen, isn't it?
Verstappen.
I can never pronounce it correctly. Yeah. So it was sort of neck and neck, and then Verstappen did this sort of crazy move to overtake him, and then because it was, I guess, considered an illegal move, he was told to give the lead to Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, give him first place. So. Yeah,
That's a classic Formula One thing, right?
Yeah.
Which I think is which is part of the reason why, and it's ironic because it's like that was part of the reason why I think Ricciardo left Red Bull because he was getting told to let Verstappen win. So Verstappen's been on the receiving end of those sort of decisions before. So if he complains, it's like pot calling the kettle black, mate.
It's a pretty crazy little sport. Like, yeah, and I mean, it goes so fast as well. But I think at some point as well, Verstappen had to let Hamilton go, you know, overtake him, and he just slowed down so much that he ended up getting in the way, and the cars
total
ended up touching.
Chaos at that Grand Prix, apparently.
And he was booed and all sorts. So, we'll see what happens next. So I think, is Verstappen still in the lead? Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they go after this one in the next round. So,
You might have to talk to Nat Richards. I think she follows the F1.
She does. She's a crazy mad fan. So I'm going to have to get her to get me up to date so I understand it a little bit better. I just see them go round and round in laps, you know.
Exactly. Can you imagine going to the Formula One when you're a bit hungover?
Oh,
it's so noisy.
Yeah.
It is noisy. Like,
yeah,
the F1 is like on another level.
See, those
cars
to F1.
Those cars are insane.
It's been to the Motorplex. Does that count?
Yeah, it's like that. But it's like the Formula One cars are like, it is this, the wine is incredible. It's like standing next to the engine of a 747,
with
your head right on it.
Yeah.
it crazy.
That sounds awful at any time, really, for me. I'd need some headphones, I think.
Well, thank you so much for coming into the studio, Kate. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Speak to you then.
Well, that's it from me. Glad to have your company. We'll be back tomorrow live from 8:45 a.m. And you can download the full show or individual interviews by searching for The West Live wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to The West Live with Ben O'Shea, brought to you by the State School Teachers Union campaign to fix WA's teacher shortage. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.
A desperate search.
No sign of the four-year-old.
We miss you.
We hold grave concerns.
Cleo was taken.
18 days of asking, where is Cleo?
What's your name, sweetheart?
My name is Cleo. My name is Cleo. The 18-Day Police Miracle. A new podcast from the producers of Claremont The Trial. My name is Cleo. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.